RadioInfluence.com.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. This is my podcast that talks mainly football. We do a little college, but mostly NFL. Very Buccaneer heavy. Buccaneers didn't look quite as good as they did in week two. It is their second game and didn't look anything like week two. So it's early in the season. People had the Buccaneers going to the Super Bowl after the first game, and that's just the way and the NFL is. There's 32 cities that are overreacting. That literally happens in 32 cities. But I think we saw a Buccaneers team that, first of all, looked not nearly as deep as we wanted him to be. And I think that was one of the questions going into the season. And the stars didn't play like stars. So we're going to talk about that. Kind of an ugly loss on the road that I actually saw coming. I just kind of predicted it myself. So I've been two for two so far. So I'm not going to babble by myself. I usually do this by myself, but I like to bring some knowledge in. We got my guy Mark Cook from the Pewter Report here. How are you feeling today, brother?
I feel that I had a bad football weekend between my Noles getting killed.
They didn't look good.
Did not look good.
But you know what the equation is? If you're starting a true freshman quarterback, that means you don't have a quarterback.
Well, but you know the crazy thing is, Ian, if you would have told me before that game that a true 18-year-old freshman who was playing high school football this time last year would come in and throw for 278 yards and no interceptions against NC State, I'd say that's an easy win.
Sure. You would think that.
You know, you would think that. You're right.
Well, in some of the old teams, that may be the case.
Right.
Okay, at Florida State, like a lot of other teams, you go through, you know, football's a cyclical thing. Mm-hmm. And not saying that, you know, they're down, but they ain't what they were. They're not what they were. They were to the point where, you know, you have a, you know, we're seeing what Jameis Winston is, okay?
Right.
Although there was times we didn't look all that pretty yesterday. But we're seeing that he took it to the next level and still a leader.
Right.
So that's a big void when Jameis Winston leaves.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And they've, you know, they're lacking some leadership, whether it's on the coaching staff, from the player standpoint. But you're right. Jameis Winston was a one-in-a-generation type quarterback at a school. Tim Tebow did that for the University of Florida. You know, Sam Bradford did that for Oklahoma. Vince Young did that.
Yeah,
so, you know, listen. You can be the greatest schematical coach in the world in college football. You really need a quarterback to win a football. You know, I mean, now Alabama's a little different because they could win with you at quarterback probably.
Correct.
Because it's a machine that they put out there. But college football, unlike the NFL, is you can have a good team and a superior quarterback and win a national championship. I mean, because that quarterback can make that much of a difference in college football. That doesn't work exactly like the NFL. You need an elite quarterback in the NFL, I believe, to win championships. And I think the Buccaneers have a guy that they hope is on that trajectory. Yesterday wasn't his day, but in college football, you can get lucky. And I think Jimbo got lucky with a Jameis Winston because he didn't do it with E.J. Manuel, and he didn't do it with Christian Ponder, and he didn't do it with DeAndre Francois last year. So,
well, I think when you bring in a guy like Tim Tebow, or a Jameis Winston, I think talent comes with him. You know, like I heard of Tim Tebow in high school. Like I heard about him. So when Tim Tebow now is, you know, I'm going to Florida, now all of a sudden you're bringing some of the fastest guys in the world with him. You know, some of the best tight ends in the world with him.
And guys didn't even consider the University of Florida before they see that guy sign.
And, but you know, I tell you what, Tim Tebow is so big. Well, he's bigger than anybody with that skill set I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When he came out of college, I go, I just never seen this before.
Right.
Like if Tim Tebow runs for 1 yard, it's the best 1 yard run ever. That's just the way it is.
Did anybody ever get a clean lick on that guy too? I mean, he looks slow motion. He's running and yet he always fell forward. I don't ever remember, a meme or a screenshot of Tim Tebow getting knocked backwards. It just didn't happen.
I mean, listen, he's not a quarterback. He's just a tough athlete.
Yeah.
He's not a quarterback, though.
He's a ball player, as our youth football coaches used to say when I was a kid. Are you a ball player or
sure,
not?
Sure, sure. But the thing is, he was also surrounded by probably the best college football, one of the best college football teams offensively ever. Because, you know, you have guys that are great college football players all over the place. Tim Tebow played with great NFL football players. All over the place.
Yeah, guys that are still in the league right now. I mean, the Pouncey brothers and things like that. Absolutely, you
know,
yeah.
The tight ends, you know, other than, you know, Hernandez, well, you know. Yeah.
He's no longer playing.
But I tell you what, though, he was a hell of a football player.
Great football player.
Yeah, you know, so, and you had Demps and you had all these guys, Rainey, with all the speed. So when you see Tim Tebow make a couple fakes, you have to open up, okay? Because, or else he's going to give a reverse to Demps, and Demps goes down the way, and then, you know, so everything has, it makes his job a little bit easier.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, as a Seminole fan, I hated Tim Tebow and the Gators, but I respect him and what he did for that program. And make no mistake, they don't win that first national championship, even though Chris Leak was a starting quarterback. Tim Tebow converted fourth downs, came in and made plays. They don't win back-to-back without Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow wasn't the starting quarterback in the first one under Urban Meyer, but they don't win it without him.
Sure. Now, you know, we were talking before we got on air about the political aspect of everything going on now in the NFL. And I have two podcasts, by the one, A Flavor in Your Ear. I talk a lot about politics, and I've never talked politics on In the Trenches before, but, you know, they're neck and neck, right? I mean, they're right beside each other. It's impossible not to. And, you know, when I put on, you know, Sunday, you know, pregame shows, and I'm trying to watch the pregame stuff, and all I'm seeing is Donald Trump and people talking about the anthem. It sickened me for a little while. I'm like, just, you know, I watch a lot of political stuff the rest of the week.
Right.
On Sunday, I'm trying to watch football, you know. And then when it became political, you know, I was like, you got to be kidding me. And so throughout the day, there were so many different things that happened that so many people are commenting on. Before I continue, I mean, what is your stance? I mean, you hate to say stance, but unfortunately, that's a good word. What are your sentiments of what's going on right now with the players kneeling, Donald Trump getting involved, owners getting involved, and all the things that are going on?
Well, I mean, from a player's perspective and from a fan's perspective, let's start with those. I can see where the argument comes in on both sides. I can see somebody whose grandfather served in World War II, or maybe their father who died in Vietnam, or their grandfather, whatever it may be. I could see how they could be offended by that. I understand where they come from. I had a great uncle that was killed in World War II by a German sniper 7 days before the Germans surrendered. He got shot and killed on April 21st. The Germans surrendered on the 28th. He's dead. He's in a grave behind Beulah Baptist Church in Lithia, Florida right now. I've got pictures of his coffin and the flag on top of it. But at the same time, I think we have to look at it. And again, this is my opinion. This isn't Pewter Report's opinion. This is Mark Cook's opinion. I think we have to look at it and pull back a little bit and stop focusing on a flag. I think we need to start looking at it more of, you know, the grand scheme of things, the things that are wrong in this country. And I probably, Ian, was on the side of the fans a little bit more before the Trump comments about the sons of bitches.
I get it.
You know, and I think you saw that Sunday on the NFL shows, a guy like Terry Bradshaw. I don't know Terry's political persuasions, but he's a country boy from Louisiana, wherever he's from, right? Yeah. He's a 70-year-old white guy, right? I would assume before Trump said this, he was probably more on the side of the flag type deal. You know, everybody should stand. Okay. But you saw pretty much clear across the board, even guys that you would consider conservative guys take offense to what the president said.
Correct.
And I think that was a situation where Donald Trump got caught up in, you know, he's not a professional politician. He just says what he wants to say. You know, being around politicians in the Bay Area your whole life, or since you've come to Tampa, and I know you still talk to politicians, county commissioners, mayors, and things like that. I mean, it's a formula, right? You know what to say before you go out there and say a speech. You know, you've got somebody telling you
Don't you have to put Donald Trump in his own category?
That's what I'm saying. He's not a politician.
How am I going to put this right? He's barely human. Because I don't care what you do for a living.
Right.
Nobody goes up and says these things.
It's
insanity to me.
I don't know that he believes. And again,
he has to believe
I can't
it.
Say.
He has
Does
to
he have
it.
To believe
he
it?
He has to. He has to believe it. He has to. There's no way he doesn't believe that. He's the king of people who believe that. He's the leader of people who believe that.
Is he the master politician who's manipulating
these people?
It's the same
thing.
I don't know.
It's both the same thing.
Is it?
If you're manipulating people to act this way, then yes, you're the leader.
You know, I'll be honest with you. When Donald Trump decided to run a year and a half ago, however long it was, 2 years ago, it intrigued me because I am of the persuasion that I'm sick of the way Washington's been.
I get that, yes.
So the drain the swamp kind of mantra or whatever it was, that appealed to me because these career politicians who are, to make no mistake, on both sides of the aisle are lining their pockets with money from donors and political action. That's not going to stop. But you thought maybe here's somebody who could go in there and at least be a person that could maybe change that or look at it from a working man's perspective. I don't know that any of those things have come true. I mean, you can sit here and say, well, you know, the stock market's doing this and that, but the stock market did great under Obama for the most part.
Well, who knows anybody that has stocks anymore?
Well,
there's wealthy people
my mom and, dad
and
still
poor
do, thank
people.
Goodness. That's my inheritance. They better.
You know, but I mean, okay, that's some way, 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 way back then. Now, they're probably retired too, right?
Yeah, they're
okay,
retired,
well,
sure.
Okay, people in their 40s and 50s and 30s, they don't have any stocks anymore.
You know how many stocks I have?
Okay, how many?
0.0. I don't own any stocks.
No, I don't either. You know? I used to have all kinds of stocks.
Right.
Trust me.
Right.
Okay, listen, and I have money.
Right.
And I don't have stocks.
Right.
So the average ham and egger that's going check to check, which is me. So everybody's talking about the stock market. It's only affecting my wealthy friends. Okay?
Sure.
And I got a few of those, but even my rich friends don't have any money anymore. So. Yeah. If that's what we're going on, we still got to live check to check, and you can never stop working. When am I going to stop working?
No.
It's not going to happen.
No, you and I will be greeting at Walmart when we're 85. Yeah, we'll be doing something
okay.
until we die. Yeah.
Because our bills aren't going to stop happening. I got a little something for my 401k from the NFL, but, you know, they're crafty because they don't let you touch it until you're 65.
Right,
only
right.
one problem. We don't live that long.
That's something you have to think about. Absolutely. I mean, you can pull it out with a 35% penalty or whatever.
Oh, yeah. They'll butcher you now. They'll butcher you. You can get it out at 55, but you get like half of it or something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no doubt about it. But
they're no dummies.
You know, and so the thing is, and going back to what you were asking me there, you know, that's my stance on it is, and I told you this before the show started, I'm a 46-year-old white man.
Okay.
I do not know what it's like to raise a son, which I have a 16-year-old mm-hmm. son, that I have to worry about when he drives being pulled over
correct.
Strictly based on the color of his skin. Mm-hmm. Or even if he listens to the officer, worry about getting shot. Listen, my dad taught me a long time ago, there's three people you're never going to win an argument with. Your parents.
Your boss.
Your teachers. Well, the boss too.
Yeah.
And police officers.
That's
don't even try.
Don't try.
Waste your breath.
No, I know that.
But there are black people, there are African Americans being killed today who are still listening, who are doing exactly correct. What my dad said. You say, yes, sir, no, sir, put your hands on the steering wheel, and you do everything that police officer
told you
to do.
You know what I saw the other day? I think it was on, I don't know, TMZ or something. They had a white lady get pulled over, and she was like, I don't have a gun and blah, blah, blah. I don't want you to shoot me. You know what the cop says? We only shoot black people.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like,
and how can people say, how can people in good conscience say that a guy like Mike Evans and Deshaun Jackson and Colin Kaepernick and some of these guys don't have a legitimate beef? Because you can't just wish away and hope that the world isn't like that when it is like that. Now, I've got family and friends in law enforcement, and I think they're some of the finest people in the world. They're doing something that I'm not brave enough to do because it's a dangerous world out there for a cop. My son joked about that the other day about being a cop. I said, no, sir. I mean, I can't tell you what to do, but I don't want you joining the military. And I don't want you going overseas fighting wars because I'm selfish. I got one son and I don't want to lose him. And I don't want him to be a police officer either.
But I don't think people, when they look at Colin Kaepernick and anybody else is kneeling, I don't think that they're looking at him and say they have nothing to complain about. They just don't care. Okay.
I don't think they understand, Ian.
You don't understand.
I can't relate.
So our president, who understands less than anybody that I know in the world, who understands less about inequality than Donald Trump? Seriously, he's not even around a brown person ever. Okay, so he knows nothing about it. So when you have when you say, I grew up blessed, okay? I didn't grow up with a lot of money, okay? Now I'm doing very well for myself. I run into it all the time.
Sure.
All the time. So this equality thing, first of all, it's not going to happen, okay? It's not going to happen. But people are forgetting why Colin Kaepernick knelt to begin with. So when people are when the president says you should be fired for doing something that's your constitutional right and that you're a son of a bitch, and then he said that KKK guys and Nazis, there's good people in there.
Yeah.
And then the players who are very well educated, and there's only one thing, I've never seen a Nazi that's well educated. I've never heard it. So these eloquent players that are kneeling should be fired, and they're son of a bitches. As an African-American person, it makes the hair on my arms stick up because I'm like, well, that's blatant. Well, Jemele Hill from ESPN, I want you to hear the irony of this. She says that Donald Trump's a white supremacist. I would never say that. Now, there's some things that wouldn't make that crazy,
right,
okay,
right,
that have come out, lots of them. So the people that are on Donald Trump's side tweet at her and call her a dumb N-word bitch. Mm-hmm. They think they're helping the situation. They think they're helping the situation when they do that.
Right.
And, like, that's their rebuttal.
Right.
So you're just... What she said is, I mean, you guys are throwing, you know, gasoline on the fire right there. What she said to begin with doesn't sound crazy.
Well, it's you know, and I think there's some frustration with Jemele Hill and with what ESPN, their consistency on how they treat people who make political statements. When a guy like Kurt Schilling gets fired because he disagrees with the transgender policy of North Carolina as far as the bathroom thing goes, or Linda Cohen being suspended for you know, her remarks. But again, it's if you're going to allow Jemele Hill to be able to view her political opinions, you can't tell Kurt Schilling he can't, even if you disagree.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You've got it's either the First Amendment for everybody or it's for selective some. And that's the thing I think that frustrates people. But again, listen, I try and stay out of the whole political thing because I've got my personal views. It is impossible. And you know what? My boss, Scott Reynolds, before we came in, was reading me a column that he wrote. And the title of the column is, I Just Want My Football Back. And I think that's what you were kind of saying.
That's kind of what I said.
That's, you know, we just want our football back. And I think most people just want their football back because you know, football is kind of that reprieve. You work all week. I mean, the average person works all week. They're stuck in a cubicle somewhere. You know, they want to watch their college football on Saturday and they want to watch it on Sunday.
Maybe
they
get away from politics a little bit.
Get away from the politics. And now it's being thrust in their face and people are resentful towards that. But at the same time, again, I try and I'm not good at it. Again, I'm a 46-year-old white guy. I've never dealt with racism. I don't know what it's like. It's easy for me to sit back and say, well, these guys are making millions of dollars. They're blessed. They live in the greatest country in the world. And all of those things essentially are true. But that's the thing that I was noticing on Facebook this morning. It was one for, one against. Every post was either for. It split right down the middle on my page.
That's our world, though.
But not every one of these guys are millionaires. Not many of them are going to play.
Most of them aren't.
You know?
And how long are they going to be millionaires?
That's the thing.
Let me tell you this.
Are some? I was listening to Calta. I listened to you on with Mike, and then I listened to the after show, you know, when we got here. And he was, you know, part of his frustration was, you know, a lot of these guys were kneeling without really having any cause or, you know, whatever their protest was yesterday. And they don't really even understand the full issue. And that may be true. But I'll say this. I told you before the show, talked to Colin Kaepernick last year, did a conference call when he was playing for the 49ers. Well, the Bucks played the 49ers last year. I'm getting old. I can't remember these things. But, yeah, so we did a conference call. They're on the West Coast. It was late in the day. Most of the media had left. There was only a handful of us in the room. And I had a preconceived notion about Colin Kaepernick before I had a chance to talk to him. And I was afraid that he wasn't going to want to be able to. I was afraid he wasn't going to talk about these things. And I brought up, you know, his stance and we talked about. And there was a dialogue created. And I left that conversation not agreeing 100% with what he said, because I can't go along with a guy who's wearing a pro Castro T-shirt, you know, socks that are depicting police officer as pigs, you know. But again, having that dialogue and that conversation, I had a better understanding of where he came from. and understood more. And the thing that the one thing that has impressed me the most about Colin Kaepernick, and I sent this to somebody who was complaining, saying, well, these million-dollar spoiled athletes should put their money where their mouth is. Colin Kaepernick has done that. He pledged $1 million. He's okay. Donated $700,000 at least so far. So I do have respect in that sense for what he is. But again, I can look at it from both sides because I have a grandfather who's buried. I mean, my grandfather's brother, my great uncle, who died defending this country. But you know what? Where was the Florida State and North Carolina players when the national anthem was played on Saturday? In the locker room?
Yeah.
They don't come out before then.
No.
You know, they didn't always do this in the NFL.
It's almost not about the anthem. We're making about the anthem. Okay. It's way deeper than that.
Right.
And from experience, when I hear people say this, and I hear it all the time, and people think that, you know, I guess it's a cool thing to start something with. But when somebody says, well, these guys make millions of dollars, stop right there. You're a hater.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're a hater. Okay, you don't want them to make a lot of money to play sports smashing into each other for 2-3 years? Right. You don't want them to make a lot of money? Or they're playing a game. Okay, we are playing a game, but it's work. You admit that?
Absolutely.
Okay, you know it's work.
It. Absolutely.
You think you step on a football field?
I mean, it's work for a youth football guy. We used to run those kids in the ground. My dad was my coach.
7 days a week, it's work.
We couldn't take a water break. This was in the 70s, back when there was no child abuse laws, apparently. We used to have to run wind sprints till we couldn't spit anymore.
Yeah.
They'd put you in jail today.
They used to say, don't drink too much water, you're going to crap up.
Right.
But another thing they say is this. It's a privilege. You've heard it.
Right.
It's a privilege to play in the NFL. Is it?
I mean, it's.
Is it a privilege? First of all, you have to earn it, right?
Yeah.
So why is it a privilege that I earn something? So it's a privilege for me to be one of 32 right guards in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
How many people want my job? I got that job because I'm privileged or because I worked my ass off?
You worked your ass off.
Okay, so I was here. These guys making millions of dollars, blah, blah. They should stand. It shouldn't be any different than somebody's a cab driver or making $20,000. It's about being patriotic. Okay, it's not about how much money you make.
Right.
And where people that start sentences like that, you're haters, okay? And you're not liking something about that athlete making a lot of money.
The thing that gets me about that, Ian, and again, boy, I thought we were going to talk about the Buccaneers
beat
by the Vikings, which is fine. But anyway, the thing that gets me about people that complain about the money these players make, first of all, I see these players. I'm in the locker room every day. I see them off the field. I go to their charity events and things like that. But they in the grand scheme of things, compared to what I make, even the long snapper, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even a practice squad guy makes a ton more money than I do. It's a short shelf life, and they've worked hard to do it. But here's the deal. You know, and I got in a lot of trouble on my Facebook. And that's why I stay out of politics, because you're not going to please everybody. You're going to piss people off. But I did finally get frustrated with somebody complaining about the money that these players make, and the teachers should make more money, and this. And I agree. My mom's a retired educator, okay? She absolutely, for what she did, molding young lives, was not paid for the impact that she made on people in the grand scheme of things. But nobody is paying $150 to come to that school to watch her for 7 hours on a Wednesday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And why is no one bitching about the money that George Clooney makes in his next movie?
Right.
Why is no one giving a damn about the money that Bruno Mars is making when he goes on tour? And why are nobody complaining about those guys using their platforms? You know, actors and musicians and things like that. Why is the athlete that's getting beat up from that? People say, why are you using that? You shouldn't use that as your platform. That is their only platform. How else are they going to be able to get noticed?
I said this. Okay, if you're an African-American in the United States of America, what other platform is there? What other platform is there where the majority of the people participating are African-American? Because I'm going to tell you right now, do you think you're going to be a black guy in the NHL, Anil? That'll be the end of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that'll be the end of you. Or if you're in baseball and you kneel, it'll be the end of you. They had an Hispanic player kneel yesterday.
Right.
He might be able to get away with it, but once again, he's the majority.
Right.
If you're in a minority and you kneel, you're done. You have to listen. The majority knelt and he's done. Colin Kaepernick. And,
right.
And the irony of it is, he was one guy. Now there's hundreds, and they're all playing, and it's all okay.
Right.
So to me, I don't understand. First and foremost, it's everybody seems so hypocritical. You can't do that, yet it is American. You're supposed to be able to kneel. You're supposed to be able to kneel.
Here's the thing, Ian, in my opinion, and I hate think it's the most despicable thing in the world to see somebody burning a U.S. flag. But yet, that's why this is the greatest country in the world, because you are protected to be able to do that because those people went and fought and died for your Correct. Freedom to do that. While I completely disagree with burning a flag or spitting on a flag, my great uncle died to give you that right. Because when you start taking away those rights, then slowly but surely more and more rights get taken away. And then you end up in a situation where you're no longer the greatest or the freest country in the world. There are a lot of problems in this country. This is far from the most perfect country in the world. But I still think it's the greatest country in the world. I think it still gives people the most freedom to be able to do what they want. If they're a cab driver and they don't like that they make $20,000 as a cab driver, they can go to school and educate themselves Correct. And do something better. And Correct. there are plenty of other countries where you're not afforded that opportunity. Again, I can see it from both sides. And I'm not trying to ride the fence on this. But at the same time, I can see where
side.
People...
There's right, not... Right. There's not... Okay, and I've said this many times.
Is there a right side?
There's not a right side. But there's also not a wrong side.
Right.
Okay, because...
I agree with that.
I'm going to compare it to something, okay? So how many situations have we seen where a cop kills a black person? Lots of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not every time the cop is right, and not every time the black person right, is right.
right.
Look at the situation,
sure.
and you go, "Well, you shouldn't have reached down like that. You're gonna get your butt. You're gonna get a cap in your ass real mm-hmm. fast." Now, some dude is like, "No, no, don't shoot me!" Bam,
right.
that's the cop.
Right.
But everybody wants to make it always one side or always the right. other side. Those are the people who are the problem.
Right.
I think you as well. There is two sides of this.
Absolutely.
Now, if somebody who's military is upset that they're kneeling, they have every right as an American to be upset. They have every right to not watch the NFL. They have every mm-hmm. right to protest. They have every right they have, period.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to give that player the same right
I agree.
To kneel.
I agree.
So if
and again, they're kneeling. This is the thing that gets me. I love the term. It is a peaceful protest.
It's they're a not peaceful
now,
protest.
I can't agree necessarily with what the Pittsburgh Steelers did by saying, screw it, we're not even coming out.
But what
the Buccaneers did,
part of it,
the Buccaneers, arm in arm, for the most part, mm-hmm. Deshaun Mike taking it, they're still facing it. They're not just sitting on a bench. They didn't turn their back. Oh, there's an NBA player 10 years ago that did mm-hmm. that, Chris Jackson, I think mm-hmm. his name was.
That was a religious thing.
That was a religious thing, but that to me was a little bit more offensive. But again, he has that right.
But we still can't tell somebody
right.
religiously they have to do something.
But
for Donald Trump
right.
to say that they should be fired,
right.
what he's saying is you can't have your own religion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's telling people.
Mm-hmm.
So Jehovah's Witnesses don't stand up for the anthem. So now the kids are going to hear our president say you should be fired and you're an SOB. And now if a Jehovah's Witness sits down, people are going to look at them like they're the devil.
Right.
That's not fair.
Right. Well, they are Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm Baptist, so we don't like them. But I'm just kidding. I kid Jehovah's Witnesses.
Listen, my mother was a Jehovah's Witness, yeah. and I don't like Jehovah's Witnesses.
I mean, you didn't get to do Halloween or birthdays
but
or anything,
still,
right?
No, I did. I, oh,
okay.
My mother was late. Yeah. But I just didn't like them knocking on my damn door all the time.
Hey, we still get them
my house
pretty
muffins,
regular.
You know?
You know what? I will give the. I will say this, and I tell people all the time, again, as a Baptist. Boy, if the Baptists work nearly as hard as Jehovah's Witnesses,
I mean, they grind.
They grind. And the thing is, they
sure.
believe only 144,000 of them are getting into heaven, and they're trying to recruit people to take their place. That's dedication.
Well,
I would never do that.
But I must roll the Scientologist.
In fact, I would be like, don't go to church. No, no. If I only knew there's 144 getting in, I'd be like,
is that it?
You don't need to go.
Is that it?
You don't need to go. You're good. I don't know. Something like that.
I'm too bad for up there. I think I'm going to stay somewhere
no,
in the middle.
No, you're not too bad.
Too
None
bad
of us are too
there,
bad.
You know? Listen to the Tupac song, Thug's Mansion. That's where I want to go. I want to go to Thug's Mansion.
I want to go to heaven. I ain't going to lie. I want to go straight like the Baptist taught me. I want to go to heaven.
That, huh?
I believe it.
Well, congratulations. Okay, let's get to the Buccaneers, okay? Because they needed some heaven yesterday. They didn't get it. What did you think? Okay, how much did your perception of the Buccaneers change after their first game and their second game? Did it change drastically?
No, it didn't change drastically because... I will say I was surprised at the way the game went down yesterday. It didn't shock me that they lost, although I predicted them to win. I didn't expect them to play as poorly as they did defensively because I really thought to myself, even before the game, I said, boy, the Buccaneers are maybe the biggest acquisition this team made was keeping Mike Smith as a second year because he had a chance to leave. They kept him as defensive coordinator. And I thought to myself, boy, that is huge for this football team because even if Minnesota's defense is good, And they were. We saw that. Very good. You know, the Buccaneers defense is pretty damn good, too. Now, when I saw at noon that Brent Grimes was going to be out, I said, that's a hell of a lot worse than Quan Alexander or Chris Baker, because I thought you could, you know, you could throw Clint McDonald in there for Baker. Kendall Beckwith played pretty well last week in relief of Quan. But I knew secondary wise, in the cornerback position, they might suffer a little bit. The thing that surprised me, though, was how poorly Vernon Hargraves played. I knew Ryan Smith would struggle a little bit, but I was really surprised at how poorly Hargraves played. But I think defensively, that was the biggest surprise for me. But I, you know, we did our podcast. Peter Report does one after each game, and you know, my thing was, you know, no gloom and doom. All right, Pittsburgh didn't expect to go get beat by Chicago. I mean, yesterday was some crazy games.
There was a lot of teams that didn't expect what happened yesterday.
And that's
couldn't have got 50% if I say pick me the winner. No, you wouldn't have got 50%.
No, I mean, in all honesty, you know, and I'm gonna be chauvinistic here. You know, women, when they do the picks, they like to pick the color of the uniform. That's how they base their wins on. That would have worked better yesterday,
no doubt,
than you and I sitting there for 8 hours going over every stat from PFF. They absolutely would have beat us on that, because there was no rhyme or reason to those games yesterday.
Listen, you know, I lost money because I was like, listen, Pittsburgh's going to kill Mike Glennon. I watched I do my show, pregame show on the bone, 11-1 on Sundays. And if you would have heard my show before the Chicago game, and the way I described Mike Glennon, it would be like he listened to my show and played just like I said he is as a quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change it. He won yesterday, but Mike Glennon is below average in every category. If something breaks down, that play is over.
Oh, sure.
It is over. And he's going to throw the ball. If it's 3rd and 10, he throws it 5 yards.
Right.
If it's 3rd and 5, he throws it 2 yards. And what you're going to do is, he's not going to make a lot of mistakes, although he did against the Bucs. He's not going to make a lot of mistakes, and you're just going to lose going away. Mm-hmm. That's his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did against the Bucs. I didn't watch the game yesterday. There was some funky stuff going on.
Right.
Like they blocked a field goal for a touchdown or something like that. So they didn't do that much offensively.
But they blocked the field goal, ran all the way down, and then they ended up fumbling at the goal line because the guy stopped. Diggs almost did that. Chris Conte almost caught him.
He almost caught him.
If Chris was a brother, he'd have got him. Let's be honest. Huh? Can I say that? Do we need to edit this out?
If Chris was a brother, he'd be a lot closer to a lot of receivers.
Oh, come on. Yeah, that's my man. That is my guy.
You just said the same thing.
Yeah, well, I'm saying he's not the fastest guy on the team.
Chris Conte's your guy?
I love Chris.
I'm sure he's a great guy.
He's a great guy.
He's not a good football player.
Yeah.
If like I said, he's 3 steps behind everybody who's covering. You see what he tried to do yesterday? He turned the wrong way on a receiver running it out. He turned the wrong way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that a high school player does. NFL player can't turn the wrong way.
Derwin James did that Saturday, that North Carolina game. This guy's
once again, that's college. That's college.
But he's going to be a top 10 pick next year. That guy, I mean, completely whiffed on an open field tackle. Completely turned the wrong way, and the guy ran right by him. Never should have happened. But anyway, and yes. And what you're saying, yes, Chris did make a mistake there, and Chris is not perfect. But
he's not perfect, but he's not close to perfect, and he's not a good football player. Okay, so let me tell you about some other things going on, okay, with the Buccaneers. Offensively, I said this about Jameis Winston. You're a young quarterback. You're going to make bad decisions. He has to stop making very bad decisions. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to throw into coverage every once in a while. That's going to happen, and some of them are going to lead to interceptions. The very bad decisions, while you're going down, flicking the ball forward into a group of 5 people is a very bad decision.
Yeah.
That goes the other way for a touchdown like 9 out of 10 times. Yeah. And we caught something for like -3 yards or whatever.
Right.
That's got to stop. You know, him in training camp falling down and throwing, get that out of your mentality.
Right.
Okay. He's going to make some bad reads. I get that. But offensively yesterday, I didn't see this crazy explosion of an offense that we were told we were going to see. Ian, I didn't see it.
Ian, they ran the ball 9 times. There are teams yesterday that ran the ball 9 times on their opening drive.
Sure. Yeah.
You will not win many football games in this league if at the end of the day, your running stats or your rushing totals are 9 carries for 26 yards.
Yeah, but they went down quick in the game. And listen, if you could go back and listen to my podcast, and I'm going to tell you, this is the number one, and I've never gone back and looked, okay? But I'm pretty sure this statistic is going to be relevant. The team that rushes the ball, not for more times,
sure,
If you rush it 50 times, you win almost every time.
Well, that usually means you're ahead.
Okay, you know? You're grinding it out. You're wearing teams out. By the fourth quarter, they wore out.
Right.
We didn't run the ball more than nine times because it was a situation where we had to bring four receivers out there.
No, I agree.
When you're down by two and three touchdowns, you know, you just can't grind it out anymore.
You also didn't run the ball more than nine times because you don't have a dynamic running back in there that can get you, that you feel confident can get you as many yards as a decent pass play.
You don't think that's Doug Martin, do you?
I think that Doug Martin certainly is the best running back that the Buccaneers have by far. We've seen Doug Martin.
I just think he's a number. I just think he's a number.
I think Doug, you know, a couple years ago, him and Charles Sims, you know, they led the league in rushes over 20 yards. They led the league in combined rushes. There's nobody on this team this dynamic to run the football. There's guys that can get you 3 or 4 yards, hopefully. But when you're down, you know, you need, I mean, it helps to have a weapon back there that you feel you could throw a screen pass to and maybe it goes 60 yards or hand the ball off and there's a chance they can break one. The Vikings did not fear the running game whatsoever yesterday. And as you said, they got down early and that played into the hands of the strength of the Vikings. They could play press man coverage more. They could take some more chances. And they could just pin their ears back with their defensive line and send the house after James Winston, and that's what they did. It's, you know, you got to be able to run the football. I was watching the game with my son yesterday, and I when I played Madden and college football on the old PlayStation 2, because it's the last time I played, but you know, I was like Dirk Cutter. If I ran the ball nine times in a game, that was amazing. I wanted to throw it deep every time. I get it. You know what I mean? I understand. That's exciting. That's fun. But I also understand from coaching football, that's not a recipe for success very often.
You lose most of the time.
Yeah.
I played Madden sitting in this chair, and my boy sat right where you are just yesterday. I come out with the Cowboys. You know what he gets? Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
Zeke Elliott. If I can run the ball on you, you can't beat me.
Right, right.
If I can run the football, you can't win.
Well, and that works whether it's a video game,
doesn't matter,
whether it's Little League football, high school, college, or the NFL.
Well, you have to bring more people in the box.
Right.
And that makes my receivers that much better.
And guess what? Now, all of a sudden, play action, which is a big part of this Buccaneers offense, works. Well, if you can't run the football, teams are not respecting the play action at all.
Well, you said the Vikings didn't fear the Buccaneers run game. I'm going to take it a step further. I don't think the Buccaneers thought they could run the football.
Yeah.
Because the first few times they ran the football, I mean, the Vikings were owning the line of scrimmage. They were on our side of the ball, and we weren't getting anything. And I said in the first quarter, we can't run the ball.
But you, as an offensive lineman, I guarantee you there were games. I shouldn't say what you are thinking. But I'm sure there were times when your team got away from running the football, and you're like, just keep pounding it. We're going to eventually wear these guys down, and these running backs are going to pop one.
Sure.
Now, again, when you're down 21 points, that goes out the window. Unfortunately, you played on some teams that were down 21 points a lot.
It is unfortunate.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, as an offensive lineman, you love nothing more than going out there and driving a guy and pancaking him into the ground and watching his will. Mm. And that's the thing that I loved when I coached and even played high school football, is when – during a course of a game, you see that other team's will just go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing more. This goes back to our DNA as cavemen, probably, to be able to dominate and make somebody submit. And that's exactly what happens when you pound the football and run the football. And I thought they were going to be better. Now, it's only been two games, but they haven't run the ball particularly well in either of these games. You know, I thought the move of Marpet in the middle, Sweezy on one side and Pamphlet on the other side. You know, I didn't know how those guys would work in pass protection in unison, but at the same time, I thought for sure, because Sweezy is known as more of a run blocker than a pass blocker, I thought he's done well, and he did give up a sack yesterday, but I thought that, you know, Sweezy's done well in pass protection, but I haven't really watched the film a whole lot to take a look at him specifically, but I just really thought that those three in the middle would be more of a road grading unit. And they would be able to kind of impose their will a little bit more than they have.
Well, the thing is with me and Marpet, I don't like to see a Pro Bowl caliber guard switch to center because now we're losing a guard and bringing a center in that maybe doesn't have as much experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's playing poorly. I just think he's a better guard.
He had four bad snaps. You can't take that away.
No, that's
you
a big
can't
deal.
You can't yeah you that's can't we can't minimize that. I love Ali Marpet, great guy. But look. When you're in the shotgun, if you can't get that, I mean, we saw the Florida Gators beat Kentucky the other night. They must have had six or seven bad snaps from. I mean,
I was
listening to the Kentucky broadcast on Sirius because I was driving in the second half, and the commentator made a great point. He said, "If you can't snap a shotgun snap, then you got to get the hell out of the shotgun."
Sure.
And yesterday there were at least three, maybe four. They were off a little bit, and again, that throws the timing off of things. It completely does. So,
well, Jameis is comfortable back there now.
There's no doubt.
He's been there forever, so they're not going to change their offense because of Ali Marpet.
But Ali Marpet has got to change what he's doing, or Joe Holly's got to get back in there because there wasn't those snap issues with Holly.
No, but then we're losing a lot because Marpet's way stouter than Holly. I think Holly is below average center.
What's more important? If you had to pick a guard or a center, mm-hmm. you're going to be biased on this because you were a guard. But what's more important to the offensive line? If you could have a better center or a better guard on your offensive
center.
Line, center,
100%. That's not even close.
As far as
guard is the least important position on the line.
See, that's funny because when I coached youth football after I coached high school football, we always put our worst offensive lineman at center. You know what I mean? Now again, you know why? Because you couldn't line up over the center and some of the youth
that makes
leagues,
sense.
You know
what I mean? That makes, well, they're going to have somebody on your nose right. that's pretty damn good, and yeah. you have to snap that ball the right way and get your hands up and right. stuff. Listen, center is more important because not so much the physical part of it, but the mental part of
sure.
it. Okay, so, but Marpet's still learning some of the intricacies right. of playing center as he's going through. Maybe Holly knows, but Holly's not nearly as physical.
So what you've done is you've taken a 2-year starter, a guard, and made him a rookie center.
That's exactly right. So yeah, he still has to make some rookie mistakes. Right. But I said earlier, when I'm watching Minnesota defensively, they were just meaner and rougher than us. Mm-hmm. Okay, and one of the knocks I've said on the Buccaneers throughout the years is they're just not mean. Okay, look, I've seen some teams, and some teams are just mean.
Yeah.
And those are the teams that win.
Right.
And the Buccaneers are just, there's a bunch of nice cats out there. Right. I think the mean is Quan Alexander. He's mean. Baker, I think, has a little edge to him. These guys are both out, okay? I think Tandy, I see, come downhill every once in a while. I haven't heard his name.
The nicest guy in the world, though. Not a mean guy.
Oh, I met the guy. But listen, John Lynch is a nice guy, too.
Right.
He's going to decapitate you.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, but that's not just on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, sometimes you just got to line up and say, we about to run the ball. Stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
We haven't done that.
Right.
So if we can do that, that makes Jameis at least 25% better than he is right now.
Well, and I'm gonna bring this up, and Scott and Trevor and I have made this point since the preseason. In the preseason, there were two sacks by starters in the whole preseason. One was by Noah Spence, which came off of a blitz by Robert McClain,
mm-hmm.
flushed the quarterback out. Noah got him. The second one came on a blitzing Kendall Beckwith. The pass rush, and again, you know this, it being an offensive lineman, if you can't rush the passer, it doesn't matter if it's Case Keenum or Tom Brady back there, they're going to pick you apart.
You
and we saw
win.
That yesterday.
You can't win.
And they've had one sack in two games.
You can't win.
They didn't sniff sacking Keenum yesterday. And now Noah Spence has a separated shoulder again. You know, Jaquie Smith, hopefully he can come back. But, I mean, you're predicating your pass rush on Jaquie Smith because teams are not stupid. They're going to double Gerald McCoy. And I've yet to see Robert Ayers, who is a mean guy. I love Robert Ayers. His tank may be running empty because I haven't seen him do anything in two games, unfortunately. He got banged up a little bit yesterday also. Gerald's banged up. Levante now with the high ankle sprain. It could be, you know, weeks that he's going to be out. You know, Vernon Hargraves left a couple times in that game with an ankle injury. You know, I don't see how it's going to get better before it maybe gets worse, which is kind of a scary situation. But look, the Buccaneers were, this was almost an exact replica of that week two game against Arizona last year when they got blown out 40-7 and they lost Luke Stocker. They lost Doug Martin. They lost Robert Ayers in that game for multiple games. Almost an exact replica of that game. And yet they ended up, you know, rallying and finishing 9-7. But the schedule's not as easy as it was last year. And there, you know, it's not an easy thing to go on a 5 or 6 game winning streak like they did last year in this league.
No, it's hard to win every week, period. I mean, it's really, really hard.
Right.
And I've heard people say, oh, the Bucks are going to go 11-5. And I go, well, how many times have they gone 11-5 in the history?
Right.
It's hard to do.
Right.
And there's been certainly teams that are way more talented than this team, okay, that mm-hmm. the Buccaneers have had. Now, in the offseason, you know, I'm a Buccaneer fan, but I'm a realistic Buccaneer fan. Okay, you have to prove it to me. So everybody's like, well, the Bucs are going to be great this year because they improved the defense. What did they do? Well, they did this and that. So they go, well, how are they going to get sacks? Well, you know, with Gerald McCoy, this is going to be year he gets double digits. Let's stop right there. Let's stop right there and rewind, okay? How many years in a row are we going to say that? All of the years?
Every year he plays.
Okay, so
it's going to be the year.
Every year,
Ian,
Gerald McCoy plays for the Bucs.
Ian, this is the year.
I have to hear how great of a preseason he has and how this is going to be year he gets double-digit sacks. And every year he gets 30 tackles and 7 sacks. Every year. And I don't want to hear somebody's banged up in football in the trenches.
Right.
Did you ever hear a Chris Hovan was banged up? Ever?
Or Brad Culpepper.
Or Brad Culpepper.
Right.
They banged up. And listen, I've seen a lot. I've talked to a lot of people. Okay? This is my mentality. And I played for a long time. Find me a game that I went down and you took me off the field and I came back. If I'm on the ground and I'm down, I'm done. I see 20 people going down and coming back.
Yeah.
Those aren't dogs, man.
Yeah.
I grew up with dogs, and the guys I played were dogs.
Right.
Paul Gruber was a dog.
Right.
Played every snap, every game, tried to get up with a compound fracture in his leg.
Yeah.
And you're going to lay on the ground and come back?
Right.
You ain't that damn hurt.
Yeah.
Now I'm hearing, oh, this guy has a bruised shoulder. Wouldn't you think your shoulders are going to be right? As soon as you start playing, even before then, your shoulders are banged up.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're banged up probably from the second day of training camp when the pads go on.
Dude, I'm banged
until
up before
January.
I played football since I was 7.
Yeah.
I was banged up.
You banged up in the offseason.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Towards the end of my career, I couldn't raise my arm to shoulder level.
Right.
I couldn't. But when Sunday came, you had to do what you could do.
Listen, let's face it, Ian. You were a spoiled millionaire making athlete.
Well, you know what I made my rookie year?
You had no right.
You know what I made my rookie year?
You made $105,000.
$90,000.
Jesus.
$105,000. Those are rich people on $105,000.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Tony Mayberry got like $105,000 or something. We were rich at $90,000. So these guys, listen, I want the athletes to make their money. I really do.
I agree.
But I don't know if it's not softening them up. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what softened them up is the CBA. I mean, these guys get, 11 padded practices during the season.
That's fact.
This was, and Scott and I brought this up multiple times on our podcast, and I'm not knocking Dirk Cutter for this, but this was the softest training camp I've
ever
seen. And I'm going back to when I watched you guys at the University of Tampa when my dad would take me out there.
Yeah. Don't compare to that.
That's not even close.
No.
These guys, there was very little, if any, goal line drills.
Nothing.
One-on-one tackling drills, you very rarely saw that. The one-on-ones between the O-line and D-line, we didn't see that except when we went to Jacksonville, and that's because Doug Marone's an old-school coach.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
This was just a soft, and I understand Dirk's thing was, his number one thing was to get these guys to week one healthy. Okay? You accomplished that. Well, now, guess what? We're going into week three, and you've got a long list of injuries. I don't know if there's any correlation between that. Who knows?
I think there is.
But, but the thing is, the nutrition, the training, the staffs are so much better. You would think the injuries. But here's the deal.
Let me say this, okay? People keep on saying that.
Mm-hmm.
People keep on saying that the athletes are better, the nutrition's better. Back in the day, there was guts everywhere.
Oh, yeah,
and guys didn't miss. Mm. Guys didn't miss. Now these guys, I look at offensive linemen, they almost have abs.
Yeah.
But they're pulling
Except
muscles.
Except Evan Smith, he doesn't have any abs.
No.
But
we didn't pull muscles. We didn't have muscles.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like we had the muscles. But
we talked about this when I did your podcast last year. The lower the body fat percentage, the more likely you're going to have those soft tissue injuries. Whether it's hamstrings and muscle strains and pulls and things like that. I want five, flabby, gut hanging over the belt.
They don't have
strong as ox offensive linemen. If
they don't exist
that can have
anymore.
That, you're right. They don't
exist anymore. But once again, the mentality of it, I don't know if it's a money thing. I don't know if it's a prima donna thing. I don't know if it's a CBA because a DeMar Dotson, he comes by here every once in a while. We're at Dignitary headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy. We sit down and we chat. You know, DeMar Dotson, I didn't count, but I don't know if he had more than 6 full speed reps in preseason.
Yeah.
Because you played the first game. Then one series. And then he got hurt in the second series, the first series of the second preseason game. Hadn't played since.
Yeah, Jacksonville. Yeah,
So he played 6 full speed reps. And then you want him to play 70 plays, a couple weeks later.
But surprisingly, Ian, he may be the best offensive lineman
he's playing
so far.
Well. I think
you know,
he's
surprisingly
well, yeah.
well, because I thought the same thing. I was like, man, this is not good because he didn't play. But you know what? I remember we talked to DeMar after he hurt his groin. And I'm going to, you know, sit out the last two preseason games and get arrested, which is code for I'm a veteran. You know what I mean? And you know what? I don't begrudge the guy because he has put in the dog work.
More so than begrudge him. That was he's in his ninth year.
Yep.
In my ninth year,
yeah.
Listen to me closely. I played every snap that year, in my last year.
Yeah.
And I didn't practice one time.
Yeah.
I didn't practice one time on Wednesday or Thursday. Right. Not once.
Wow.
I sat on a cooler. I knew the offense.
Sure.
Friday I came out. I limped around a little bit. Saturday took a shot, whatever. Yeah. Sunday, you know,
game
I mean,
day.
You
got
to figure out ways to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're in your ninth year, you know how to play.
Yeah.
You know, the younger kids, they need to practice
Absolutely.
A little bit.
Yeah.
DeMar Dotson's going to be fine.
DeMar's going to be fine.
You know?
And you know, I watched him yesterday, and I thought he played well. I thought, I'm not one of those to blame officiating for losses, and that certainly, there were some bad calls in that game, and that didn't cost the Buccaneers that game at all by
Definitely
any stretch. But I thought that was just a terrible call on DeMar, on the one where he pancaked Xavier Rhodes,
Agreed.
And they called a hole. I mean,
yeah.
That's what you try and teach your offensive lineman to do every single play.
You know what I said? Defensive backs, it's hard to lock up a defensive back.
Yes.
It really is.
In open space.
It's really
hard. Almost impossible.
But if you do get your hands on them, they're supposed to go to the back.
Yeah.
They're supposed to go to the back.
Yeah.
Because you're allowed to grab somebody's jersey.
Right.
You're allowed to. As long as you don't get them outside your body.
Right.
He had them inside, pancaked them. It looked bad. And, you know, was it Xavier Rhodes?
Yeah, it was Rhodes.
Did a great job of flailing his arms, that's part of the game.
Yeah,
and he got the call. So now, but Xavier Rhodes, he was locking up Mike a little bit.
Yeah,
he's one of the better corners out there.
No, he is, and you know, just make a point here. He's a Florida State graduate. I just want to let everybody know that.
Of course,
played
you
at Florida State.
You're Florida Stateians,
you know,
you guys will let us know. I watched the game.
Hey, we're 0-2 right now. The only thing we got are good players in the NFL.
I literally watched
the
game with three Florida State guys, and you guys will have to let us know. But you know what I'm saying, though. If it's Indiana, I'm going to let you know, too. It's just not Indiana.
Yeah,
it's just not Indiana a whole lot. What's going on with O.J. Howard? I watched O.J. Howard play, and you know what I love about him? He blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And like
He blocked. Good.
He really does.
Yeah.
And you don't really see tight ends that really – like, we're going through Austin Zafarian and Jenkins, where after the first preseason game, I watched him play, I go, it's not going to work. He's soft as tissue paper. He's just soft.
Right.
I watch O.J. Howard off the bat. He's going after. He's going after people.
Yeah.
The rest of it's going to come. But is it to the point now where he's not part of the game plan? Because I haven't really seen much of him, period, from preseason to now.
I don't think they, you know, I was surprised at how little they utilized the tight ends yesterday. Now, Cam Brate went out, so I thought for sure that OJ would get more targets. I don't know if it was the way that the Vikings were playing the Buccaneers defensively, scheme-wise, that kind of took the tight ends out of the game. That's the thing, and again, I am not second-guessing Jason Light's decision to take O.J. Howard over Dalvin Cook by any stretch, even though I'm a Florida State fan. I think you cannot pass up that talent at 19 with O.J. Howard.
Don't pick a running back. Don't.
And I'm not. But I will say this. If you're going to pick a guy at 19 that you felt was a top 10 guy, they had him evaluated easily in their top 10, maybe their top 5 of all the draft picks. He's had two targets in two games, though.
That's what I'm saying.
I think you can use him a little bit
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely.
Now,
you
is that
so.
Jameis's decision? Here's the problem. You know, Trevor brought this up yesterday when we were doing our podcast. I don't think he said it on the podcast. Remember Mike Evans had that temper tantrum on the sideline?
Next series,
the Bucs go out there. And Jameis forces the ball into triple coverage and he gets picked off. Is that an immature quarterback trying to appease everybody? We've seen Jameis on the Hard Knocks thing tell Deshaun, hey, it's cool, I'll get it to you, and things like that. You know what? As a quarterback, I don't think you need to give a damn about if your receivers are complaining, your tight ends are complaining. You do your job. You find the best option on the field. Because on that interception to Mike Evans, O.J. Howard was on the left-hand side running straight down the field with nobody in the TV picture. Maybe there was more coverage there than I saw, but Jameis never even looked his way. He was going to Mike Evans in that situation. Now, to Jameis's credit, even though it was in triple coverage, Mike had his hands on the ball.
Correct.
I mean, they have a good chemistry. I understand why it's his favorite target.
He could have caught it.
I mean,
Jameis explained himself when that little encounter he had with DeSean Jackson. Yeah. He tells you what he said exactly. He goes, Mike has earned the right for me to go looking for him. Because anytime Jameis is in trouble, he looks for Mike Evans, and they're on the same page, it seems like. So Mike Evans is Jameis's crutch, no doubt. Now, that, you know, DeSean Jackson's going to have to do a couple things, and I'll be honest with you, from what I know of DeSean Jackson as a wide receiver, he's doing some things that I didn't really know he was good at that I'm surprised. Like he's catching the 15-yard outs and doing some really good stuff, catching the ball in the middle of the field. There's a couple, three times where Jameis didn't hit him. And I talked about this last week, and maybe you see the same thing, but we're talking about, you know, a Jameis and his launch point. It sure seems like his launch point is high. Like it, when I, when I'm watching Jameis throw a deep pass, it, if you, if I just looked at him without the rest of the field, it would look like he's throwing a Hail Mary. And he's overthrowing a lot of guys. He got a very strong arm, obviously. But to me, when you flatten out a pass a little bit, it brings the error, you know, level down a little bit. You know what I mean? When you're trying to drop it into a bucket, it's hard to make that throw. It has to be perfect or not.
It's the complete opposite of shooting a basketball, says the white guy, the 46-year-old white guy. As I tell my son, though, I mean, I never could play basketball. I coached a little bit. Look, with a basketball, you want up and over the rim. You, the more of a line drive your shot is, the less. I mean, that's just physics.
Well,
but in football,
there's going to be a time where it's going to go the other way.
In football, but in football, it's it is different. You're right. I mean, you're trying to throw into a trash can in the corner of the end zone. That's not, you know what I mean? That's not.
But there's different ways of throwing to the trash can.
I agree.
There's, you know, there's different ways of throwing to the trash can. You could throw the ball 10 yards high and throw into the crash can, or you can throw the ball 40 yards high and throw into the crash can. So that's a whole different situation. But I'm saying, though, one a ham and egg can do, the other one they can't. You can't throw a ball that, that drops into the trash can, like, straight down. But somebody might get lucky and throw a flat pass and get there. So there's less room for error. You
the
know?
Thing is, though, with Jameis, with Mike Evans, you know, he doesn't have to throw it in the trash can. He's just got to throw it near the trash can. DeSean Jackson's a smaller guy. He's got to throw it in the trash can. And he threw one of his best passes I've seen him throw in his career. That touchdown pass to DeSean Jackson yesterday was a great, great
throw.
Now,
his interception down the middle of the field when DeSean Jackson was coming across, he could have thrown the ball 15 yards to the left. And that, because there was no safety help back there. You throw it 15 yards to the left, DeSean Jackson runs under it. Other than throwing it behind him, that's it. That was his worst pass of the game.
Okay,
because just DeSean had maybe two steps on. That should have been a touchdown. So that's 2 weeks in a row, two of the week before, one to Charles Sims as well.
You got that one to Charles Sims. If you got to underthrow it if you have to, because you've got to. I mean, you can't overthrow that ball when a guy's that wide open. I mean, even if he underthrow it and gets tackled after a 30-yard completion, that's better than a 0-yard completion.
Correct.
I agree.
Correct.
And I think these are things that you know Jameis will get better on, because Dirk's going to hound him on it. But there was, you know, I don't know what happened on that interception with DeSean. Not the first one, the second one where he, there looked like there was some miscommunication there. I don't know. We're going to talk to Dirk about that today. That one in the middle of the field where he, you know, it was, wasn't even close. I don't know if DeSean was supposed to go a different way or if Jameis just made a bad throw. I'm not sure what happened on that, but I'm one of those guys that believe, you know, don't coach the aggressiveness out of Jameis Winston, because that's what makes him a special guy, or will make him a special guy.
You don't want to make him Mike Glennon.
No,
you
know,
that's the reason why he can be Brett Favre, baby, one day, is because he's not Mike Glennon. Mike Glennon can't be Brett Favre. Jameis Winston can be Brett Favre. Now, a couple things he did yesterday, he hung a couple, two, three, four times. He hung his receivers out to dry.
Cameron took a shot. Adam took a shot.
A couple of them took shots. I mean, and those, you know, those are balls that he's got to eat. You know, I mean, you can't just keep on laying them out there like that, because they're not going to last. They're not going to last out there forever. And, you know, you're going to get your receivers get real short-armed, and that's not good for you.
I don't think you're ever going to see Adam Humphries get short arm. He is one tough SOB. That guy is going to, he knows he's going to get his clock cleaned, and he's
Oh no, I disagree very much.
Do you?
Yeah. Let him get ding-a-ling a couple more times. Arms will get short.
well, they're pretty short to begin with. Well, he's only 5'10".
Okay. But you know, you get ding-a-ling
he's
a couple
get
times.
He's going to get T-Rex arms.
Yeah. I'm watching the game now, and everybody says about concussion. I see concussions all over the place that people don't want to say it's a concussion. If they say this, he has concussion-like symptoms. You know what that means?
He's got a concussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might as well just say, I have a concussion.
Right.
I have the symptoms. Well, that's because you're concussed.
I don't believe for a second I mean, the Cameron Brate did not come back in the game after getting rocked.
100% he had a concussion.
He was wobbly. He tried to get up.
Did you see his head snap?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. His head snapped so unnaturally. I'm scared like he broke a bone in his neck.
That's what I was afraid of. After the game, they had TJ Reeves interviewed Cameron, and Cameron goes, "No injury. I'm fine."
Well,
I guarantee you he's in the protocol today.
Maybe not.
How can you not?
Okay, listen. You know
what
they don't?
The league has a guy that has to be there. I mean, I guarantee you, Cameron was probably wanting to go back in the game, and the league guy was probably saying, "I'm sorry. You know, I watched you wobble and know what country you were in."
It's still football, and the players don't want to get off the field. They don't. Okay, concussion or not.
Remember what they used to call it when you played, and even when I played, you just got your bell rung. You got your bell rung.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's a concussion.
Yeah, that was a concussion.
You know what else is a concussion?
You know what? I got my bell rung many times.
When you see stars,
yeah,
that's a concussion.
Right.
So there's times where I saw stars 30 times a day. Jeez. Fact. Yeah. Remember Irv Randle?
Yeah.
Stars.
Yeah.
All right. 5'11", what, 260 with 22-inch biceps?
Right.
Stars.
Right.
Wasn't the fastest dude in the world, but he's going to come and hit you in the neck. You know, I played against, what's my guy's name from New Orleans, a short linebacker that passed away. I can't think of his name right now. 5'9". He used to bring stars, man.
Did he go on to coach?
With Carolina.
Yeah, with Carolina.
And he passed away.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. I mean, I thought he tore my jaw off completely, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody said to me, "How many concussions did you have, you know, throughout your career?" I'm like, "It wasn't documented to have any."
Right.
But you know who didn't either? Tom McHale. Tom McHale, who died of a drug overdose, and they cut his brain open, and they said his brain looked like a 70-year-old Alzheimer's patient.
Yeah.
Then they cut Aaron Hernandez's brain open. They were like, damn.
Right.
I mean, you know who else's head they need to cut open before he dies? O.J. Simpson. It's not good.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch these documentaries on O.J. Simpson, they all say, like, he would snap. That's what CTE is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an old-school running back, if you want to find somebody with CTE, start there.
Sure.
Because now there's first down back, second down back, third down back. There were just running backs back in the day,
right,
and one.
Right.
Like, they never came off the field.
Ricky Bell in that game against the Eagles, the playoff game in 79, I think he had 42 carries in that game.
Sure.
38 carries, I believe it was. For
a lot of NFL carries,
yards,
man.
In the end of that game, John McKay ran him so hard and so often in that game, the Eagles players were actually helping him up because they felt bad for the guy.
Really?
He was just gassed. He took shot after shot. But
Kept on going.
That's the way it was back then. And you were ridiculed if you came off a football field.
I understand that.
Know, yeah.
I mean, that was our mentality. Don't come off the field because, first of all, you don't know who's behind you.
Yeah.
You have no idea. Like the year I told you I played every snap in Philadelphia. Philadelphia went out and got George Hageman, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They gave George Hageman $2.5 million, and I wasn't making that. We'll say that.
Right.
Okay? And they put him in the training camp in front of me. I beat him out, but I know very well that the second I come out, they're going to put this young kid.
Yeah.
I'm not coming out.
Yeah, not coming out.
I'm not coming out. Like, this dude's making a lot of money sitting on the bench, and you know what? Good for him.
Right.
I like to see people make the money, because if you're not making the money, the owners upstairs in the box that are, you know, eating candies during the game and sipping mimosas.
Right.
Like, I don't want them to make the money. I want the players to make the money.
I agree with that.
So, so our Buccaneers, we come to the conclusion, our Buccaneers are human, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They're still not good enough to step on the football field and say, we're a playoff team.
Right.
They're not good enough for that yet. Right. And they still have a long way to go.
They do have a long way to go. And it's not going to be easy with the amount of injuries they're going to be dealing with this week. And again, we talked about the pass rush, and Trevor made a good point yesterday. If the Buccaneers don't get a sack against the Giants, they may not get a sack all year. The Giants' offensive line is just terrible.
Yeah, they are.
And they've got to find a way to figure out a pass rush. And you know what? If that means putting your cornerbacks on the island, on an island. But here's the deal. If Levante's not going to play, who knows if Quan's not going to play? So now you've got three linebackers you're going to blitz, you know, I mean, guys, you know, rookie players, you know, Adarius Glenn, who's not had a lot of, he's not a rookie, but
it sounds easy,
you know,
it sounds easy, right?
Right.
Let's just blitz. Okay. If you have no Quan and no Levante,
sure.
If you blitz, whoever's in there for them has to be one-on-one on somebody.
Right.
And you know who else didn't play very well one-on-one? Hargraves.
No, bad.
Okay.
Bad.
So now you're putting, one-on-one is a tough situation for any defensive back.
I agree.
If you blitz, they're one-on-one. So
you better get there, because if not, and we said it yesterday, the lack of pass rush, it didn't matter if you had Richard Sherman and Deion Sanders as your cornerbacks yesterday. Case Keenum was going to pick pick them apart because he had all day to sit back there and throw.
Period.
And it doesn't matter how good your cornerbacks, you're always, the receiver always has the advantage, always.
Always.
In a one-on-one situation.
They can't cover.
You know?
They can't. I asked Tony Dungy this once, had him on air, and I could have answered it for him, but I wanted to hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Coach Dungy, what's more important, a great pass rush or great DBs? He goes, pass rush.
Yeah.
Like that fast.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. You know, if you're a defensive back and you're able to jump on somebody's first move knowing very well if he makes another move, your defensive linemen right. are all over the quarterback,
right.
that makes you that much better.
Absolutely.
And our defensive backs don't have that luxury
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go back to last year, we don't make that many quarterbacks uncomfortable.
Right.
We just don't.
Right.
We don't. We every once in a while, we'll have a game when we get four sacks. And then it'll be two or three games in a row where we barely touch the quarterback.
Yeah.
You just can't consistently win in football. I think rushing the quarterback, to me, might be the most important thing above running the football and offense.
Yeah.
If you can rush the quarterback, because there's 10 or 12 quarterbacks where you give them time, you've lost.
Yeah.
But even if you give Mike Glennon time.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not Mike Glennon. most of the other ones.
Well, Case Keenum. Case Keenum, a perfect
yeah.
example. I mean, the guy
ain't
had all
faith.
No, he's not.
The guy
would not be a perennial backup in the league if he was as good as what he shows against these three games against the Buccaneers, which he's beat him 3 years in a row. And I tweeted out Saturday, or maybe it was Friday, case closed. It's done. The Buccaneers are going to eat Case Keenum's lunch. This is ridiculous. Mm. I just did not want to believe that this guy could beat this team 3 years in a row.
I said yesterday on air,
362 yards.
Before the game, I go, bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to go on the road mm-hmm. in the dome. I hated it. The noise is tough.
Yeah.
The Bucs have a lot of injuries.
Right.
There's a lot of people in funny spots.
I wanted to say one thing. I was going back to the Jameis Winston thing when I was talking about, you know, forcing the ball to Mike Evans and worrying about if Deshaun is happy. Let me ask you this, like I'm the host or something, but again,
I like to get
your perspective of things. Can you have too many weapons as a quarterback?
No.
You can't?
No.
As a young quarterback, do you feel pressure? Does Jameis feel pressure to try and appease everybody? And that's what I was saying. If he does, he can't. He's got to get over that.
Those are two different questions now.
All right.
Those are two different things. Can you have too much talent? No. Can you make them all happy? No.
Right.
No. Like when I was in Philadelphia, we had Ricky Waters was our running back and Charlie Garner was our running back. They're mm-hmm. both very good running backs. Sometimes Ricky was hot. Sometimes Charlie
yeah.
was hot.
Yeah.
When Ricky's hot, Charlie's mad.
Right.
Because Ricky's getting the
sure.
ball.
Sure.
And vice versa.
Yep.
Our offensive coordinator was John Gruden at the time. And one game, Charlie Garner was going off in the first half. So he kept on feeding Charlie. And I think Ricky got one carry. And going up into the tunnel, Ricky had this very attractive Asian girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
She attacked John Gruden in the hallway because he wasn't giving Ricky the ball.
Wow.
And I was on her side. I was hoping that she was going to scratch his eyes out because I'm not a big
John Gruden fan.
I'm not a big John Gruden fan. Nobody
yeah.
should be a big John Gruden fan.
Man.
Anyways, Mark Cook from the Pewter Report, I appreciate you helping us out here today.
Yeah.
Now, if people want to get in touch with you or Pewter Report, how do they get that done?
Well, the best way to do it, obviously, is, you know, go online. We have a mobile. It's not a mobile app, but our website is very mobile friendly. We've determining that the more people are visiting our website on tablets and phones these days. But PewterReport.com, just go to PewterReport.com. You know, we have multiple stories. I'm going to be heading over to One Buck. Dirk's at 2:30. So we'll have stories. I'm not sure when this podcast will be out, later today or tomorrow, whenever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll have stories. We've got all over our post-game coverage. Follow us on Twitter of all the Buccaneer writers and people other than the Buccaneers.com or Buccaneers themselves. You know, we've got the most Twitter followers. We're very active on Twitter. We're very fortunate to have a new writer that started with us this year, Trevor Sikkema. He's a young buck, Ian, in the young blood. Scott
yeah,
and I,
man.
You know, we're so old and we're dinosaurs.
Way back.
And, you know, we bring in some young blood. You know, he's into the hip music and all the video stuff, and it's
good.
Really energized our website.
Yeah.
And so we appreciate what he's done. So people, you know, and our Twitter followers, we've really grown in that way so they can follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You have to try and avoid Pewter Report not to find us.
Correct.
We're out there. But we definitely want people to come to the website. And just like you with all of your work, we encourage people to follow our sponsors. Even if you don't need the service, if you're in the store, you stop by, give them a call, just say, hey, thanks for helping out, because they are what keeps the lights on. They keep you paid. They keep us paid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very crucial to do that. So if people will do that, we'd appreciate it as well. But PewterReport.com. Again, at Pewter Report on Twitter, on Instagram, same thing. Facebook. They can find us. We're out there, but we appreciate it.
You're a smart businessman trying to get your sponsors love. Yeah. You're a smart businessman.
Well, I mean, that's I understand. I'm blessed every other Friday when my direct deposit goes in. It's not because of what I wrote. Mm. It's because we have sponsors who are willing to sponsor us. Correct. And so we got to show them love for sure.
Good stuff. And this is going to be airing not too long from now.
Okay.
Jason's going to get it done.
Can you cut out all the controversial stuff I said about? Dude, you just cut out that first half hour. That'd be great. Stuff?
There was nothing all that controversial.
I'm just kidding. No, I mean, listen, you know what? Just as Colin Kaepernick has a right to his opinion, just as Scott Reynolds has a right to his opinion, just as the most conservative person in the world, Donald Trump, has a right to his opinion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mark Cook has a right to his opinion.
I said at the beginning, there's no right and wrong in this.
I agree.
Everybody thinks they're right.
I think that's the thing. If everybody, and I mean this from both sides, if everybody would just kind of stop and at least try and listen, that would go a long way to the dialogue.
Agreed.
Open the dialogue, have a constructive dialogue without throwing insults in there. That's the mistake Donald Trump made, in my opinion. You don't need to call anybody a son of a bitch.
Well, he's also judging people, and he's definitely having walked in their shoes at all.
Not
even close to walking in their shoes. Right. All right, this has been wonderful. In the trenches, you can follow me on social media at Ian Beckles. And if you have any questions, you can check me out, Ian Beckles at RadioInfluence.com. My podcast, Flavor in the Ear, will be later on this week on Friday, so you want to check that out as well. I speak a little bit more about politics, and I got a funny feeling Donald Trump's name will come up again because it's usually a big part of that podcast, which makes it eventful, so to speak. So thank you, Mark Cook from Pewter Report, and I appreciate everybody listening in every week. Tell your people about it if they're Buccaneer fans and football fans. Everybody have a great week, and please be safe.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter, at Ian Beckles, for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
It's frustrating, I know, for the Vol faithful. And I'm going to say it again. Butch Jones has done a very good job cleaning up that program. It's in much better shape than when he found it. But the consistent problems of game day management situations, inconsistencies on how they prepare in certain aspects of their game, offensively and defensively, but the consistent way in which they make dumb mistakes. You know, they had the same problem, and I'm referring to the final play of the game against Florida. They did the same thing against Georgia. You know, there's a saying in coaching, you're teaching it or you're allowing it to happen. The inability, and it does not matter if you're playing man or zone. Even in zone, you have to be deeper than the deepest, wider than the widest, and you've got to eye the receiver. You're better off being in man. It makes it a little easier, but you can play it in zone. You've just got to eye the receiver, not the quarterback. The quarterback doesn't matter. He can't beat you. The receiver can beat you. Your positioning can beat you. You have to be able to get deeper than the deepest and wider than the widest, and you have to play it in. And you know, they continually make the same mistakes. That's on coaching. And, well, they may have taught the kids to do it differently. They didn't do it. What are you going to do? No, incorrect. You're coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. If you're not coaching it properly, if they're continually making the same mistakes, and if they are making the same mistakes continually, you're not doing your job coaching by getting somebody else who will listen or who will understand or will be more disciplined. So, you know, it's a real problem, and it's frustrating as a coach to see some of these issues continue to rear up consistently, because if there's one team that should know how to play that play at the end, it's Tennessee, because they've been there and they've fought through it and they had to deal with it just last year. Of course, people tend to forget that in the Georgia game because they came back and scored late, and it saved Butch in that regard. And hail Butch, we love Butch, and listen, you've got to be able to correct those errors. Now, you know, where do they go from here? It's certainly going to be a big game as Tennessee plays Georgia. They lose to Georgia, and, you know, with Vanderbilt playing well. Listen, this season for Butch Jones and this Vols team is going to be defined going forward, but this is going to be part of their pass which is starting to mount up against a case against Butch Jones, is continually mounting up. It's unfortunate. It's the reality. We'll see how this plays out going forward.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.